Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Say, is your car making a knocking noise that you can't explain? Has it lost its vim and vigor? Is the dreaded check engine light now on your dashboard? Well, fear not. Gordon Fricke will be with us today to answer your automotive repair and maintenance questions. He is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. And we welcome your calls right now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email your car question to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, your car questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions today is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. He has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. If you have a question about your car or your truck or maybe even your motorcycle, give us a call, 800-348-2551, and do it fast. These shows with Gordon, very popular. 800-348-2551 if you have a car question, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back, sir. How are you?
Thank you, Ray. I'm great. How are you?
How are things up at the shop?
Pretty good. A bit busy. You know, I was in the back, way back of the shop, and going to program some tire pressure sensors, and Laura yelled out, "The news is on. You got to get on the radio." when I was driving down there, I was always, 15, 20 minutes early. Now I said, "Well, what the heck? I just have to go in the office."
Well, this is great. And sometimes when you're in the office, we do hear the jacks running and people taking tires off, and so it's good gnat sound, as we say in the business.
Well, that's a soundtrack we have running.
So nobody's really doing anything.
No, it's just a canned soundtrack.
I love it. What do you mean you were programming tire sensors? Why do they need programming?
Yeah, so today every car built after 2009, which is a long time ago now, has some sort of tire pressure monitoring system.
Yeah.
So everybody probably now has experienced a low tire light coming on.
Yep.
And most cars have actual sensors inside the wheel. They're connected to the other side of the valve stem, and they send out a radio signal to a computer module in the vehicle, which watches for their pressure. And when that tire pressure gets below a threshold, it'll turn your warning light on saying you've got a potentially low or be getting a flat tire. It's a great warning system.
Yeah.
So to answer your original question, when you replace these sensors, because they all have a lifespan, and or put new wheels on a car, in this case I'm putting winter wheels with winter tires on them, and the owner wants to have all the sensors in the extra wheels, you have to program them if you get a cloned type sensor. So you program them to the vehicle that you're installing them in. The frequency gets matched up, and when everything works correctly, they work fine.
Amazing. You know that I love old cars, right?
And oh, yeah, so do I.
I'm not that fond of the newfangled computerized cars. And really, since I had my last Cadillac years ago, I only gain cars by attrition. In other words, when we buy another one, I'll get the cast off that my wife doesn't want anymore. So I'm driving a Nissan now, and it's very nice. It's a nice truck. But it annoys the living daylights out of me. Every time it gets cold, the check tire pressure light goes on, and the tires are fine. This annoys me.
Have you confirmed that their pressures are still above the minimum?
Not exactly, this time of the year,
the colder it gets, the lower the pressure gets, and not everybody, but lots of tire lights come on when it gets cold.
Yeah, but then as soon as it warms up a few degrees, it goes away.
Well, sure. That's the law of, I don't know, Mr. Bernoulli, maybe?
Oh, I see. So, in other words, the it gets warm and then the tires fill up a little more is what you're saying.
Exactly. The pressure increases with temperature.
Well, you're not helping me here, Gordon. You mean, you're telling me that I have to do something, and this annoys me as well. All right, this email came in, and this is very appropriate. Before we get to the calls, this one came in before the show started, and the subject heading is winter storage. And Jesse writes, I have a 1998 BMW M3 convertible that I will soon be storing for the winter. I keep the car covered on carpet under my carport. What tips do you have for storing over the winter, especially to deter rodents?
Yeah, oh boy, I'm telling you. That's a very good question because a lot of people have seasonal vehicles, both snowmobiles, motorcycles, or various cars. So it's always a good idea to put a stabilizer in the gasoline. Mm. So the last time you drive the vehicle, pour some fuel stabilizer in the gasoline, and that will preserve it. It will go through the entire system from the injector to the tank. And you won't have any fuel issues when you go to start the car next spring or early summer.
Okay.
Tire pressures, I like to bring them up higher than the plaque on the door. The door is the optimal pressure. The rating on the tire is the max pressure. So if the car says run them at 32, the sidewall, the tire says they can handle 41.
Mm-hmm.
I would push 38 to 40 because they're only going to sneak down over the winter.
Okay.
And then rodent control is anybody's game because I've tried it all. I've tried the electronic devices. I've tried the dryer sheets, mothballs. All you end up getting is a car that smells like mothballs or dryer sheets or whatever. But I don't think there's any real good repellent out there, to be honest with you.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's grab a call or two here before the first break, and then we will really hit it into high gear. We start out with Michael in Olive Bridge. Michael.
Hey, you can hear me?
Sure thing.
Yep. I bought a 2019 Ford F-150 pickup truck, 3.3 liter. Since a couple weeks after I got it, I've got this lightning bolt light that comes on, and it says emergency brake, and I don't have cruise control when that comes on. I've brought it to them 3 times, and they keep saying it's fixed, and it's never fixed. Within 48 hours after driving off the lot, it's on again.
Duh.
I'm just wondering what my options are here. Is it the computer, or they don't seem to know what they're doing?
Oh, yeah. Splendid.
So, most car makers are switching to electronic parking brakes or electronic emergency brakes. And they're doing that a couple of different ways. Some of them have electric motors out at each caliper. So I don't know really the total thought behind this, but it's eliminating some components. It's eliminating all those cables that used to be under the vehicle and the mechanism that applies it. But anyway, you push a button.
Yeah, he said it was the actuator, and he replaced the actuator, and 48 hours it was back on again.
Yeah. And that's a system that's subject to being interrogated with a scan tool to get codes and data. I'm not familiar with Fords of that vintage. They're too new for me to see if they have any track record or problems. The truck's quite new, you know, being a 19. But you definitely want to stay with that and get it solved while you're full under warranty, so you're not, you know, suffering repairs afterwards.
Yeah, I got the extended warranty, so I can't live there.
Exactly.
I've lost my last two vacations. I were ruined because I had to spend a day in the waiting room.
Sorry, man.
So
did
I don't
you,
know.
Did the
you know,
same...
I don't know what to do. Should I go to the Ford or should I go to Detroit and contact them?
I don't know.
Has the same, do you know if the same code is repeating itself?
That I don't know. He said that there was they replaced the actuator and I took it out. It came back on again. He said, they had to recalibrate it or had to send a signal to have the thing recalibrate itself.
Yep.
And he did that and it went off, but 2 days later it was back on again.
Does the parking brake currently operate? Do you use it?
Yes, yes. I don't use it, but it does work.
Use it every day for a while. Exercise it and just see if that.
Really?
Yeah, just see if the computer finally figures out that all is well. And if that doesn't, if the light stays on, unfortunately, I would contact the dealer and say, you know, I love you guys, but I really don't want to keep coming back for this. Can we give it a real, you know, give it the you know, a real shot here to try to solve
it? Yeah, I mean, the emergency brake's not the problem. It's the cruise control is what I really want. And I lose that with the same thing.
Right.
Exactly.
But it's a brand new truck, and it's never run right. I'm kind of starting to lose my patience.
Yeah, I hear
that. You could call Ford customer service and just inquire. Say, hey, look, I know this is a pretty new vehicle. Are you seeing this as a repeat problem out there? And, you know, what can we do to solve it? Maybe the factory's got some fresher information that hasn't made it to the dealer yet, you know?
All right, Michael, we got to take a break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. By the way, Gordon, you know, we got an email. We talked about what principle is it that, you know, it gets cold, the tires get, you know. Boyle's Law. Doug
Boyle's
wrote it.
Boyle's Law.
Yeah.
What did I say? Bernoulli?
Yeah, it's Boyle.
Yeah, Bernoulli has something to do with air, I think.
Mm. Well, yeah, airflow over wings.
But, that's the guy. But, yeah, I got my guys mixed up.
Hey, this was scientist Milton Boyle. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll get right back to the phones here. Mike in Richmond writes in, surefire fix for rodent control for cars and storage, Gordon. He says, lock a cat in the garage overnight, every night.
That's a very good suggestion.
Feed cat once a week or so. Mice be gone. I'm not sure that the ASPCA would be all over that one, Mike, but probably works. All right, one more email, and then to the phones we go. This one's from Chris. It's a fuel mileage question. Chris says, I have a 2005 Subaru Outback with a 3.0 flat six. I have no CEL lights, a minor exhaust leak, new spark plugs, fuel and air filters, and I've cleaned the MAF sensor, but my fuel economy is down to 12 miles per gallon per tank. My friend has an Outback sedan with the same engine, a CEL, a misfire, an exhaust leak, drives fast, to put it in nicely, yet averages 18 miles a gallon. Is there anything I should look toward to improve my fuel economy?
Boy, that's not very good economy, is it?
No.
No, and actually those cars don't get very good numbers even at best. So other than the stuff that he mentioned, tires and tire pressure are quite important.
Mm-hmm.
Some tires roll harder than others. And the softer the tire, the more resistance it provides. So get the pressure up above the plaque. You know, if it says 32, try 36.
Okay.
Wheel alignment, very important. If your toe angles are out of whack, they will make the car drag considerably. So alignment is another concern. Condition of the fuel system, and that's something you really don't know about, but give a good old bottle of our friend Mr. Tecron in the gas tank, clean everything out, and then the other thing would be your normal maintenance items, air filter, and you know, he pretty much hit on the other things. So okay. I mean, that's pretty much the deal.
Gordon Fricke is our guest today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Ed is in Ulster County. Ed, you're on.
Oh, hi. Yeah. I have a 1985 Ford Econoline Club Wagon that's a diesel 6.9 liter.
Nice.
Two things. I cannot find the engine oil dipstick to save my life. I thought that was a modern thing where they don't put little inconsequential things like dipsticks in, but this is an 85. And the other thing is I cannot find the fuse for the power windows, which are not getting power.
Yikes. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so on a vehicle of that vintage, particularly a diesel engine, they most definitely have dipsticks, both for engine and transmission.
One would think.
If the vehicle is really rusty, the dipsticks have been known to rust off. And I doubt yours is gone, but I've run into a lot of newer vehicles, particularly pickup trucks, where the dipsticks have rotted completely off the vehicle.
Wow.
Now, usually the upper part is still intact because it's not in the salt blast and it's held on by a bracket.
Yep.
But you very carefully with a flashlight look around in there. I know that truck had a dipstick or has one. Look carefully, but if it's okay. Is the vehicle super rusty?
Not that bad for its age, no.
No, and again, that may not be the case at all, but I have run into that more times than I can believe. The other thing with fuses is Ford was always kind of elusive in identifying their fuses. Your owner's manual doesn't.
Fuse box that, there's one fuse box right under the dash, and there's none of the fuses are blown, and none of them say they're for the power windows.
Yeah.
And the power windows are not getting power.
I believe there's another fuse box under the hood on that truck. And if you have an owner's manual, look it up and see, and you may or may not find that those windows have their own fuse. They may be tied into other functions, or they may be on a relay that's fused elsewhere. But look for another fuse box.
I looked pretty hard. I sure didn't see one, but yeah. I guess
do you have an owner's manual?
Looking. I have several of them, and none of them really mention a power window fuse.
Yeah, they may not spell that fuse out, but they will most definitely tell you where the fuse boxes are, and they'll ID the fuses that they offer.
I'm almost thinking of just hot wiring 12 volts to wherever the hot wire is on the window switch and seeing what happens.
What do you think about that idea, Gordon?
Well, I think I would try to see if it really is a power source issue or not. It could be other things. It could be a switching problem. It could be a broken wire in the where the door meets the body of the vehicle because it's opened and shut, 10,000 times. It could be a bunch of different things.
Okay.
Well, I didn't think about the broken wire. Anyway, as to the previous caller, I've had luck with the mothballs. The other thing is unhook the battery. There's always a bit of a drain.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You always want the battery disconnected.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and maybe, or else maybe get one of those trickle float chargers that you can get at Harbor Freight or wherever for $5.
Yep, no, you're right. You're right.
Thanks a lot for the call, Ed. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Cars Today with Gordon Fricke. And Lisato in Albany, you're on. Hello?
Did you say Lisa?
Oh, it says says Lisato. I thought it was a very exotic name. Hello, Lisa, or whatever your name really is, you're on.
It's Lisa.
Okay, fair enough.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2013 Jeep Compass, and about 2 years ago, I noticed that the paint was bubbling on the hood. And now this year, I've noticed that it's bubbled all the way across the hood. It's going to be rusting. It's the beginning of rust, I guess. And I was wondering if you've seen this. And this is my third Jeep, and I bought all three of them new.
Wow.
And I've never had this problem.
I was just going to ask you that, if this was a new purchase.
Well, it was in 2013. Hmm.
Yes. Yeah. So since you've owned a vehicle, then that hood has not been repainted for any reason.
No. And I'm wondering if, because I want to keep it, I'm wondering if I should have it replaced. Is that something that I can have done?
You could, just but it may not be necessary. You mean to replace the hood?
Yeah, just the hood.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you could, and there's a couple of ways around that. If you were fortunate enough to find a hood of the same paint code and same exact color, that's a nice bolt-on thing. A used hood that's in great shape is a good option. If you buy a new hood, they come unpainted. So now you got a paint procedure. So that's going to be pretty expensive to buy a hood and paint it to match the vehicle. If there are if there is rust perforation, any rust holes, your new car, your rust perforation warranty might answer that. I would contact Jeep just to get their answer if there's any issues or potential coverage, even though it's, you know, beyond all the warranties.
So is there any place, is there any way to replace the rust or to fix it?
Well, then it requires body work, you know, sanding, grinding, eliminating the rust. Then it gets recoated with various primers and then repainted. So, you know, again, those are, you have a couple of options. If you talk to an auto body shop, it would be an interesting search to see if they could find a new, a used hood of the same color. And if it's in great shape, it matches the car and you're done. But other than that, you need to talk to a paint and body shop about getting the rust removed and getting it painted. You know, they'd have to look at it and give you an estimate.
Lisa, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest today, and Chris is in Albany. Chris.
Oh, hi. I'm a speaker. Would it be better to take you off speaker?
Absolutely, if you can.
Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah, I was driving, but I just got home.
Okay.
We've got a 2010 Toyota FJ Cruiser, and the problem we're having is when we turn on the vent, you know, either hot or cold, we get this huge just rumbling sound, and you turn the fan all the way up, and it shakes through the console. Talk to the dealership. They said that I guess it's some kind of a flaw that sometimes papers can get sucked up from the glove box and go into the air intake, and they wanted a whole bunch to fix it. And the guy then told me, he said, simplest thing to do is just run the fan every occasionally, and it'll just chew up whatever in there, the papers or whatever. We've been trying to do that, but it doesn't seem to get the sound, and I don't mind about the sound, but lately, and again, it's not an air conditioning thing, because it's happening now with the heat on. When you turn it on, if you have it above maybe 2, water now starts coming down from, not inside the glove box, but down, if someone's sitting in the passenger seat, you can have a foot bath with about 10 minutes. So all this water starts flowing down.
Oh, I know the answer to this one. Yeah, Gordon, you know this.
Okay, because I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, so what's more than likely happening there, there's probably a couple things happening. You definitely have probably debris inside that fan wheel, and it's like a squirrel cage type of a fan. And it won't grind up the papers and pass them. But we also find a fair amount of rodent material getting past the intake air filter, the cabin air filter, and then you get stuff that the mice drop or build inside your heater. So what's going to have to happen is the blower motor's got to be removed.
When we run the heater.
Yeah, going to have to remove the blower motor, clean it out, replace the cabin filter, which is filtering the air that comes in. I'm pretty sure an FJ Cruiser has a cabin filter. Some vehicles really don't, but this one I think does. But what Ray was kind of alluding to is the drain for your air conditioner is probably plugged, and that's where the water's coming from.
Yep.
And that drain
from the same rodent rascals are plugging. Or is this something on? This is another.
Well, those.
This seems
those,
to be the rodent show that we're all talking about rodents.
Yeah.
Let's not cast blame here, Chris.
Yeah. The AC
drains. I apologize to my rodent friends.
the air conditioning housing drains can just plug on any car at any time just from pollen and just junk getting in there.
Yeah.
And or the cowl drains, which are up above where the air comes in for your heater. They kind of come through above the hood area.
That's what would happen when the heat is on. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So. And this could become a big problem with
shop,
a water issue.
Yeah.
So I would definitely get it addressed and get the drain. Make sure the drain is clear. Make sure all the drains are clear up above it. Clean out the blower motor and replace the cabin filter if it has one.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's not going to improve. Nothing's going to get any better. I would just bite the bullet and get that straightened out.
Not an expensive fix, but well worth it. Let's go to Tom and Sharon Springs. Tom, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Gordon. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a 2002 Chevy Silverado 1500 half ton, four-wheel drive. The four-wheel drive stopped working. It's my son's truck, really. And the indicator lights on the switch, they stopped working. I replaced the front differential actuator and the transfer motor I put a new transfer motor on, and that didn't work either, but that was stuck in neutral, and I had to get that back. I can't get the old transfer motor cover back on. And the only thing really left to replace physically is the switch, which we know is good, and then the module. What do you think about the module? Would that cause the problem?
It certainly can, and we ran into this a lot years ago on Chevy Blazers. Same situation. The four-wheel drive wouldn't engage. I can't remember if all the warning light or if all the indicator lights would be stuck on or none of them would work, but these had a problem where rainwater was getting on the module and ruining it, and that's what wiped out the four-wheel drive. I don't think the Silverados have that. I don't think the module's in a bad place, but the telltale always was if you plug a scan tool in and try to read data from the transfer case module, you always would get no communication, like the computer was not even connected to the vehicle. If you have access to a scan tool that will go into your transfer case module and you can't read any data, it's very possible that module has failed or wiring to it has failed, power and grounds. But I would be suspicious of it. I wouldn't throw it under the bus till I did some testing, though, but that's very possible.
Okay, what happened is that the transmission service 4 engine code was on, and I reset it without reading it. Will it come back on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if that module has flat out failed, you'll get some type of a code.
It did happen after it rained.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
Okay. No communication. Yeah.
Yeah, it could definitely be a water issue.
All right, Tate. Thanks
That's
a lot,
good
Tom.
To know.
Appreciate the call, sir, and a couple of emails here. Then we'll take a break and then go back to the phones. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Jesse, another Jesse writes in. This one from Hudson Falls. Jesse says, "I have a 2016 Kia Sedona. My left turn signal sometimes doesn't turn on, or it turns on the right turn signal, even though I have pushed the left turn signal. I took it to the mechanic, but it didn't do it for them, so they don't know. What is it?" And, you know, first of all, that's always the way. You got a problem, you bring it to the mechanic, it doesn't happen. Gordon, why is that?
Yeah, well, sometimes the vehicles get scared when they come to the shop.
Yeah.
And they don't want to be torn apart or broken or yelled at or, you know, taken into a million pieces.
Right.
But that's a strange concern there, because I would really want to physically see the right lights flashing when I'm blinking left. Because
I see what you're saying.
So years ago, I'm going to take you back to a 1965 Pontiac Le Mans.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
When you push that directional lever to blink left, you physically connected a set of contacts that powered up the lights on the left side of the car to the flasher, and they flashed. There's no way you could flash the other side.
Right.
But today's cars are module-driven, so when you blink left, you send a request to the light module or the body control module, and it says, okay, the guy wants to blink left, let's flash the left bulbs. It could freak out and flash the wrong ones, but you really need to experience that with a scan tool watching the data. So it's not easy. That definitely needs to be a reproducible problem.
Ah, okay. This one, I got to tell you, Gordon, Sue in the 845 is calling me on the carpet. Subject heading, tire pressure warning. Pay attention. Sue writes, "My tire pressure warning came on for the first time in almost 3 years I've owned the car. My mechanic filled the tires. Warning went away, as I told it would, after I'd driven around a bit. A few days later, came on again, wouldn't go off. I checked the tires, and one was significantly low. Brought it back to the shop. Turned out there was a nail in that tire. Pay attention, Ray." And that's from Sue in the 845. You know what? I take a lot of abuse in the newsroom. People are yelling at me. Sometimes my children yell at me. And now Sue in the 845 is also yelling at me.
Yeah.
I'm taking a break. I've had it.
Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Cars Today. The number is 800-348-2551. We have, Gordon, a stack of emails here, and we really can't get to all of them. We'll try to get to a few more as we get through the final 20 minutes of the show. But this one I thought was in your wheelhouse, since you're a Volkswagen guy. This is from Luke. Luke writes, "My friends and I are planning to build a sleeper hatchback. Just looking for your opinions on the best platform to start with, ideally something with a bulletproof block and turbocharged, leaning towards a TDI or older Golf VR6. Any thoughts or suggestions?"
Well, so the TDI is a diesel.
Yeah.
And if these guys are diesel guys, that's a good platform to work with. The numbers of those cars weren't that high, so, I mean, they may not be plentiful if they're going to be, scouting out the junkyards and salvage yards. So Golfs in GTI form, again, not giant numbers. So I don't know what their budget is and, you know, what they're seeking out here, but there's a lot of tuner parts available for Volkswagens of that vintage, so they can very easily get on the internet and find a ton of high performance stuff to do anything they want with that car. So Volkswagen Golf platform, GTI platform is good. Jetta similar. So yeah, they'll have some fun with that.
What a great idea to do that.
It's refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's old school. Michael in Cornwall. Michael, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Let's see. Sorry. I have a latest model Subaru approaching 100,000 miles, and I brought it to two service places so far, and both times they've said, oh, when it gets to 100,000 miles, you need to change the water pump. And I've never heard of that, and I don't know if I should actually do it or not.
So do you know what year it is?
Oh, it's about 2016, something like that.
So Subaru, Subaru up to in the Outbacks up to model year 2000 and I think 11 used a timing belt driven engine, and that timing belt had a replacement interval at 105,000 miles.
Time out, just a sec. Time out.
Yes.
Hey, Michael. Hello, Michael. Daddy-o, can you take the mic away from your nose or mouth just while Gordon's talking? Because it sounds like a blast furnace. I won't lie. Yeah, that's better. Much better. All right. Now, go ahead, Gordon.
Okay. Up to 2011, they had timing belt-driven engines. And when you changed that timing belt at 105,000 miles, it was highly advisable to replace the water pump because it was in that whole area and it was driven by the belt and it was a stressed part and you normally just changed it. When they went to the timing chain engines, that all was eliminated and now there's not an interval to replace that chain. So the water pumps stay on as long as they live. So there's no set time to do the water pump on a Outback of your vintage if you are that new, if it's a 16 car. So no, you don't have to do the water pump at any specific time. If it's going bad, you'll find out and you'll have to replace it.
All right, fair enough. Michael, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Nicholas in Mechanicville. Nicholas, hello.
Hi, I just got a 2005 Volkswagen Passat station wagon, and I don't know a lot about cars. I was hoping that you could give me some general advice on maintaining my car so that I can get the most time out of it. I know
Beautiful.
It's old, but I need it to last a long time.
I love that question. All right, Gordon.
Yeah, so do you know if it's a V6 or a four-cylinder engine?
Oh, gosh, I really don't.
Okay. It doesn't matter really in my response, but those vintage four cylinders in Passats were turbocharged. So oil changes are critically important, and they're just about as important in a non-turbocharged engine, but the turbo provides a little more stress to the oil. So, you know, I would not be doing the oil changes at those extended intervals of 10,000 miles or even 7,500. I wouldn't go anything over 5,000 and preferably 4,000 and you need to use VW spec synthetic oil of the proper weight and viscosity. And if you take it to a fast lube shop, be sure they're putting on a high quality premium filter, preferably from Germany or from a German manufacturer, because there is a difference. They spec them out much higher.
Ah,
okay. So that's the most important thing on any car, and yours in particular, and just keep up with other maintenance.
All right.
If the time comes for spark plugs and filters, don't delay. Just get it done.
Okay, Nicholas, thanks a lot. Good luck with the vehicle. I hope it lasts you many years. By the way, we had another email from John. John says, you know, regarding rodent control, I got a 1991 Alpha Spider, and I have success by leaving the hood and trunk open. While in storage, mice don't nest in open spaces. It's worked so far. First of all, congrats on the Alpha Spider. That's a cool car. And what do you think of that idea, Gordon?
Well, it's a very good idea if you have the storage space where you can do that for sure. But I got a feeling they're still going to go into the interior and the heater and under the seats and in the glove box and in the spare tire and all that, you know?
Okay. Over to Boston. P, who's calling here, by the way, and where are you calling from?
I guess that's me, Larry. Oh, I happen to be in the 845.
Aha. Okay.
And my question is about 07 hybrid Prius. The big battery seems like it's not storing as sufficient as it was a long time ago. I know these things can fail. I know you can replace the plates and the cells, but I don't do that work. And I'm looking for Gordon's ideas on a Prius hybrid out of its warranty.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. 07, original battery lifespan was, they thought, maybe 10 years, and it turned out that it was more than that. A lot of them are making it to 15. When the hybrid batteries are exhausted, it's a really expensive event. And we don't see many hybrids here, but I'm thinking the last time I talked to somebody to change them was around a $3,500 to
$4,000
event. So that can render an 07 car not necessarily worth fixing if the car isn't in gorgeous shape otherwise. So what you can
have
do
you
is...
Have you heard of people...
Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, have you heard of replacing the fuel cell or the plates? And is that something a novice with good guidance can do?
I don't think they're serviceable, but I don't see these cars really much at all. To my knowledge, you replace them as complete components.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are aftermarket companies starting to make batteries for hybrid cars. If you are handy or capable enough yourself, I believe Interstate Batteries may be providing hybrid batteries for older Priuses now.
Worth looking into. Larry, thanks
definitely.
A lot.
Definitely.
That's, I believe Paul Harvey used to advertise those back in the old days, Interstate Batteries. Entertaining. This email came in from Tony, and it sounds serious. I wanted to get this one in. Tony says, check engine light on my 2007 9.3 Saab indicates fuel injector issue. The quote to replace the four injectors is out of my budget. Car currently runs great for the most part, but occasionally it won't go and it'll sputter. How long before it's no longer drivable, and will the cold make it worse?
Well, that's a good question. When the sputtering turns into non-running, I guess.
Yeah. Well, how long do you think that'll be? I mean, how much sputtering can you take?
Yeah. So what I always do when there's any concern with fuel injectors, if it's not an electronic firing problem, but if it's a performance problem, deposits are a big, big factor, and gas additives are very inexpensive, and anybody can use them. So I would get out our Tecron guy and just run a couple of doses through that back-to-back, follow the instructions on the bottle, and just if there's any sticking injectors due to a deposit issue, this may clean them up and may be home free for quite some time. So I'd try that first.
Fair enough. Now we go back to the phones and Steve in Poughkeepsie. Steve. Hello.
Yes. Can you hear me?
More or less. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Sure. Hello.
Yes, I got a question. I have an 88. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go right ahead.
Can you still hear me?
Why not? Yes, of course.
I have an 88 Chevrolet pickup, and the brake light stays on even when the brake is not engaged. And I don't understand why. I know it has a switch by the emergency brake, but it seems to be working fine.
Do you have a good solid brake pedal? Does it stop fine?
Yes, it stops fine. What I was told was when you do engage the brake, which it seems to happen, when you engage that emergency brake, the light gets brighter. But
yes.
Then when you unhook it, you know, you pull the, it's not as bright.
Hmm.
So that means that there's two issues, or actually it's not a parking brake on warning. It's something else. There is a level sensor. I'm pretty sure your truck has a fluid level sensor in the master cylinder, your brake fluid reservoir. Make sure your brake fluid is above the minimum. Bring it up to the full mark. And what I have done is gently tap that reservoir with like a screwdriver handle or something not too abusive. It's possible that the level sensor is sticking or giving the wrong signal to the computer or the vehicle saying that you're low on brake fluid, or you are low on brake fluid. Other than
right,
that...
Right, it's definitely not low, because I did...
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Go ahead.
Uh-oh.
No, you confirmed the brake fluid...
Other than
fluid
that, I know it's
the...
not low, only because...
For Pete's sake, somebody
I
go.
I know it's not low, only because I replaced the... Yeah, exactly. I know it's not low because I replaced the rear brake lines and I put new fluid in it.
Ah.
Yep. I know it's full.
Okay.
All right. So there's another feature in there that truck has. There is a combination valve that is up front under the master cylinder somewhere that senses a blown brake line, and there's a switch in there that turns the light on in case you have a brake problem. And it's possible that combination valve or that warning light valve is partially stuck. And you're going to have to get to it. And you can sometimes see whether it's in the neutral position. But for me to explain all this to you on the phone is just not possible. But there is a switch in that combination valve that could be tripped when you lost that rear brake line.
Okay, Steve.
That's where I would look.
Thank you very much for the call. And now we go to, let's see, who's been waiting? Oh, my gosh. We really have a lot of people here who have been waiting a long time. Paul in Newburgh. Paul, you're on.
Yes, I have a 2014 Chevy Impala LTZ. And when it goes to shift around 1,500 RPM, I have to stomp on it. It doesn't want to shift while driving it mildly.
Hmm. You mean it doesn't want to go to the next higher gear?
It does. Correct.
So the engine.
But only around
the
1,500 RPM.
And is this what gear shifts? First to second, third to fourth? Where is it happening?
Second, third, fourth.
So it's on its way up. It just seems to be delaying to go to the next higher gear?
Yes.
How many miles are on the car?
There's almost 100,000.
Okay. Well, that's not excessive miles. Those weren't big problem transmissions. I don't know. There are some fluid maintenance requirements for that transmission, and fluid changes on a regular basis keep the fluid clean and fresh and debris is removed. Sometimes changing that fluid later in life doesn't do any good. Sometimes it does harm. But I think I would be concerned with the condition and level of the fluid. And on that car, I don't believe there's a dipstick. You've got to take it to a shop for that. So okay. I would be concerned with the fluid level and condition, and it'd be nice to get a reading of the transmission computer, see if there's any codes or any concerns in there that are causing the delayed shifting. But it's going to require some diagnosis work. And like I said, you don't have a dipstick on that anymore, so you can't even check your own transmission fluid level.
All right, Paul, thank you. Good luck. And let's quickly go to Wynn. Denise Chatham, you only have about a minute here.
You got me on?
Yep, I got you on.
Oh, thank you for taking my call very quickly. I wanted to elucidate that idea of the air pressure in the tires. In the winter when it gets cold, this is one of the laws of thermodynamics, which nobody mentioned. So science is real. That's been around since the 1700s. And science is real, and COVID is real.
Ah, okay. Well,
just my little 2 cents.
Thanks. That's all you got on the tires, then?
Well, yeah, it's the law of thermodynamics.
Okay, well, listen.
No one mentioned that particular law.
The moral of the story is have your tire pressures checked periodically.
Correct.
And adjusted.
It's very important. Yeah.
All right, well, thanks a lot for that. This email, Gordon from Mark. I have a 2005 V6 engine Honda Accord with a small radiator leak. It's been fine all summer. Now it's approaching winter. I'd like to have it fixed. Are there any special concerns, or is there any danger to having a leaky radiator replaced in the winter? And that is from Mark. We have about a minute here.
Yeah, no, none at all. In fact, why not get it fixed now before it's zero out and it's slushy and rotten and dripping, and that's the last thing you want to do, you know?
Yeah, no, you make a point. By the way, Carlene writes, 100% pure peppermint oil deters rodents and ants. You can buy it online. You saturate the cotton balls with the stuff. It works great, but it has to be 100% pure peppermint oil, no additives.
And I like that. I'm going to try that because that's probably not a bad odor to have lingering next year.
I don't know, though, man. You know, it can be a little overpowering. You're driving on the road 70 miles an hour, and you got the peppermint fumes. I'm not sure that's the best idea.
You mean like a York peppermint patty, that type of a smell?
Why don't you do that? Why don't you hang a York peppermint patty from your rearview mirror, Gordon? Hey, man, we're done with the show. Thanks a lot. How do people find your place online?
Well, they can go to GordonF@BarberFricky.com.
All right, you just gave your email address. Now you'll have a lot of questions to answer. Hey, man, thanks a lot for being here. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
You got it.
Support comes from New England Hydroponics, offering a full selection of hydroponic supplies, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment located in Auburn, Marlboro, Seekonk, and Southampton, Massachusetts. The indoor gardening experts, NEHydro.com is what it is. Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design, featuring Cambria quartz countertops, Merillat cabinetry, and more. Designer consultations available, CurtisLumber.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajo Harry, presenting color, light, and atmosphere. Rarely exhibited paintings, including work by Grandma Moses, N.C. Wyeth, Whistler, Innes, through December 30th. ArkellMuseum.org. And Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. Well, that's it. Thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here. He'll be back again. If you're one of the many who didn't get through, hang in there. Call earlier next time. Hey, Mike Bowen, the engineer, nicely done filling in for Zachary Malloy. And thanks to Jayshree Sukram for answering the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's the book show. No, today is the book show. Tomorrow, it's Darren Tracy with Home Improvement. I got to check the schedule.